All right, agendas in RRC. Today on the agenda, we have the alternate algorithms, the new spec that Dave Longley put up there. So let's discuss that a bit. We have issue 217, which is vnode identifiers as graph names. Issue 213, which was a security vulnerability that we're concerned about with JSON-LE contexts. And a design issue, issue 204, which is our relative IRI design issue. We have a couple of additions to the agenda. One of them is a potential bug that they've only discovered while doing the algorithm rewrites that has to do with vnode renaming. And I forget the other one. Dave Longley, did you have another one?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. That was the main one that we needed to discuss.
Okay. Okay. Nicholas, you're up to scribe today. I think it's you, unless... Did you do the RDFA call last week? Is that what I'm remembering? I feel like you've scribed recently.
Yeah, that was the RDFA call.
Okay. Would you mind scribing this one this week?
No, it's okay.
Okay, thanks.
I scribed two calls last week.
Was it the RDF, different groups?
RDF and JSON-LD.
Oh, okay. There we go. Okay. Any other changes to the agenda, additions? Nicholas?
Yes, let me see now. I'm a bit out of focus right here. I have a note. Yeah, we might want to discuss the very timely reply and suggested change that Marcus emailed to in response to Eric's recent mail regarding when a default graph is turned into a named graph. It's related to the issue we are going to discuss, but it's a separate thing.
Yep. Yeah. And I think Dave Longley and I discussed it a bit. But yeah, let's go ahead. We can fold that into the blank node identifiers graph name discussion, I think, because it's somewhat relevant to that.
We can put that right after, perhaps.
Okay. Go ahead. I didn't know if you were done or not.
No, if we have time at the end, I'd like to describe some things, potential future needs that I've come across again when working with the National Library of Sweden, where we are now explicitly using JSON-LD to index and make the edits and stuff like that. So.
Cool.
Yes, but that we can put that at the end if we have time. It's regarded some kind of out-of-framing IDs that we've discussed before, and also the old reverse relation IDs.
Okay.
Perhaps for a future syntax 1.1 or something, but still, I'd like to mention it.
Okay, all right, sounds good. Any other additions or changes to the agenda?
I'll just briefly say that I think I'm going to probably end up doing sort of some community document on an alternative to list that is sort of syntactically equivalent but serializes to something that's more friendly for doing Sparkle queries, such as ordered lists.
Okay, like at list thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Probably like at... ordered or something.
Okay. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into our agenda. First up is the new alternate algorithms review. Dave Longley, would you mind giving us a really quick overview of this? If not, I can.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. So essentially, we had some older versions of algorithms a little while back that Greg and I had mostly implemented. And then Marcus came along and did some great work and updated a lot of those algorithms. However, they did a few things that were a little bit different. And then Greg came along and added an alternate spec that sort of updated the older algorithms, trying to add in the new features that we discussed over the last few months. And essentially, I decided to come back in and try to merge a little bit of both of those specs together, taking in the ideas that Marcus had used with the inverse context, which sort of helped explain or give a good way to implement compaction that didn't involve the number ranking, which some people had some issues with, and some other things like that. So, sort of putting the idea in there that it's just a lookup table on the various properties of values to get at the term that best fits those. And I tried to go in and sort of explain that in prose as shortly as possible, instead of as sort of like a big section that has an example and a visual description of the inverse context, both because I think that's just a little easier for people to digest, and also because you don't necessarily need to implement the inverse context the same way, and you might not even use one. But in any case, I also went back and essentially tried to... I remember Greg mentioned something about how his processor didn't necessarily directly implement the algorithms that he even updated in the alternate spec, but it was fairly close. And I wanted to go back and make sure that we had an implementation that matched everything that was in, that was based off of the old algorithms. And so I made sure that the implementation that's used on the playground essentially implements all of the algorithms that are put in the alternate spec, and I updated and made changes to those, incorporating some of what Marcus had to say and some of what Greg had to say. So we do have an implementation for what is in that alternate spec. And in addition to that, I also thought it was important to go through and sort of try to be a little bit more robust. So you might notice that some of the algorithms have a few more steps that are in there, both to clarify what you need to do in certain cases, and also to handle things that I don't know if we overlooked them intentionally because we just thought of a sort of a simple thing, but things like handling keyword aliasing and stuff like that actually wasn't in any of the algorithms. It might have been like mentioned, the word alias might have shown up like once in the entire spec, and so I just threw in some extra steps to make sure that we covered that. Because if you implicitly understood how keyword aliasing worked, you might get the algorithms right. But I noticed that we have at least one person who's been trying to implement a processor in C# just using the document, and he's run into a couple of problems that are just related to some of the steps in the algorithm that, if implemented directly, if interpreted a certain way, the algorithm doesn't quite work right. So I tried to go in and fix up some of those things as well. As far as I can tell, everything is in there now, except for some of the issues that I think are still up for debate regarding how we're going to deal with relative IRIs versus terms that appear in IDs. So there are like two or three controversial issues that are still left that I just didn't put into the spec. And once we resolve those, we can easily take some of what Marcus had in his spec and just throw that in. And updated, it shouldn't be very complicated. The other thing that I thought was really important with the spec was trying to make it easier for people to consume that aren't necessarily going to go step by step through all of the algorithms to try and understand what's going on. And so I added some sections that described a general problem, or as Greg said, maybe it should be called a purpose. A general purpose for what the algorithm does, and then a general solution for how to get that accomplished, and that's just sort of written in paragraph form. Greg mentioned that it's a little bit folksy right now, and I agree we should probably change that around. I was just trying to make it as easy to consume as possible, but we could probably do with some language changes there. So anyway, the other thing that I had noticed, and Manu had noticed this as well, was that it's sort of difficult to wrap your mind around how all the algorithms work together. And I tried to make that a little bit easier, both with the general solution and mentioning the other algorithms, and also describing some of them as sub-algorithms, because they're really only culled from certain in certain contexts. And I don't know if that's the best way to solve that problem, but I wanted to get that in there so people could see that it's trying to, they were trying to address it, and you know, maybe we can solve it in a better way, but I thought it was important to try and give people more context as they're reading the document for understanding what's going on, so they're not jumping all around and sort of being confused, which is sort of how I felt reviewing the document as I went through. I didn't get to updating the flattening algorithm or the node map generation algorithm. Both of those are all, what Marcus has implemented is or has written in the spec currently is almost identical to how my processor works. But we could go through and add some more general text for those. And also, we still need to update the RDF stuff. I think at least the convert from RDF needs a little bit more information on the from RDF concepts and things like that. But in general, I think the spec has moved forward a whole lot more. And if everyone agrees, I'd like us to move forward with this version of the spec because it sort of pulls in all the ideas that everyone else has sort of put forward and tries to give some more prose to explain what's going on. And we have a working implementation for it that is very close to the working implementation has not changed that much except in that the new features that have been implemented. So it should be very close to what Greg already has implemented. I know Greg was saying he doesn't want to have to go through and change his algorithms that much. And honestly, if you were to go through and change it, I don't think you would find that there are too many differences. At the same time, I also found that...
It's mostly the context processing, which I do prefer what you've done with context processing. And it's the term rank term selection stuff in the compaction that is different. And frankly, a lot of it is, I end up spending most of my time on the tests. And of course, I have test sections specifically for term checking for all the various different things. So it's my experience in the past when I go through and change something that it's, it really takes a long time. I will certainly carve out time to try to go through and get to it incrementally anyway.
Right. One more thing I did want to mention since you brought up context processing. I did reorder the spec a little bit because I felt like context processing should be first since you have to do that to essentially do anything with any of the other algorithms. And the other thing that I thought was important, since we've effectively tailored the API, and I know this doesn't necessarily apply to the algorithms, but we've tailored the API to sort of an asynchronous programming environment. And the algorithms that were previously used for context processing, if you were just trying to program, if you were trying to write a processor that was going to comply with the API in an asynchronous programming environment, you tried to follow the algorithms for context processing, it just wouldn't work. It would get very complex. And the reason for that is you would have to go off and be doing I/O in the middle of your algorithm, and that's not going to work when you start mixing in processing the context with the other algorithms at the same time. And I sort of explained that in prose a little bit and just talked about how it would be easier both to write the algorithms and understand them and for someone who's writing an asynchronous processor to just retrieve all of the remote context information first and then proceed to do the algorithms. And the other added benefit for that is that you can cache a lot more information and save yourself from doing so many network calls to go off and get things. If you find out that you have a lot of a lot of similar URLs, this was also important in our paceform work because we actually found that one of the bottlenecks in the system was doing a lot of context processing. So we actually found that we could cache active contexts after they were already processed, and of course that requires that the data that you've retrieved from remote contexts be the same. And so it helped us a lot to be able to do that caching, and so I figured we should describe the algorithms in a way that easily enables people to do the same thing if they want to, but we don't get into how to do any caching or anything like that in the actual spec.
Thanks. Nicholas, you're on the queue?
First, thanks for the great summary and work. That sounds awesome.
Sure.
I hope I caught most of it in the scribing, or some of it at least.
Yeah, sorry for talking fast.
No, it's okay. It keeps me focused. It's interesting about the preloading the context stuff, because that dawned on me a while ago, but I really didn't have time to digest the idea that's things we've talked about regarding asynchronous processing in general would be affected if instead you had to have all the contexts loaded beforehand, perhaps in a map. I wonder if there is something more to that idea which might affect the API as well, given we have discussed recently the asynchronous versus synchronous processing steps, and if there is a way to take the input and then parse that to get the contexts and get them pre-processed, then the actual transformation step is only a functional processing which could do without the requirement for asynchronous features all over or right through it.
Well, I don't know that we can necessarily eliminate that, because there's still always the chance that someone needs to go off and do some kind of IO in response to how they're processing the document. If they don't need to, obviously, it's far simpler to do the context processing before, because they get to all of that asynchronous stuff out of the way. And it certainly helps explain the algorithms to people, especially people who are writing in an asynchronous environment. So I don't think that we can necessarily remove some of the stuff from the API, because you would, if anyone wanted to do anything that we won't necessarily come up with in this group, we would end up crippling things for them, and I don't think that that's a good idea.
All right.
Okay. Paul, you're on the queue.
Yes, I'm in the group that's actually working on the C# implementation that was mentioned earlier. It's me and my teammate that have been the primary implementers of that. Just want to let you know, looking at the new spec, the way that the layout is, I do like this. It makes it a lot clearer for somebody who's not been involved in the process for years. With breaking things out, with the putting context processing first, that ended up being one of our big problems. Was it was buried kind of way in the middle, and not knowing just how crucial it was until you plowed all the way through everything. So I think that this is a good addition to the spec of putting it towards the beginning, and also having it broken down to where you have like the problem, general solution, and algorithms sections that really helps bridge kind of the technologies and bridge the concepts.
Great, thank you. That is very helpful to hear it from someone that hasn't been, you know, immersed in this stuff for a while. And especially thanks to Dave Longley. I mean, I know he's been working his ass off for the last 2 weeks trying to make sure that all the implementations are aligned and the specs aligned. So it's an enormous amount of work that went into putting that together. So I guess the question at this point is we have three specs in front of us, three alternatives that are in front of us. Which one do we feel that we want to move forward with any particular one at this point, or do we need to discuss them more? So that's kind of the question we should discuss hopefully quickly in the next chunk of time on the call, and then kind of hopefully come to a decision on that and move on. Marcus, you're on the queue.
I haven't had time to look at the algorithms itself so far, but I think we should definitely include the pros more or less directly in the current spec. So we could do that, or, well, agree on doing that, and then discuss the algorithms separately.
Okay. And by current spec, which one do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, the one I wrote, basically, the one which is index HTML, not alternate.
not alternate. So you would be in favor of using yours over the spec that Dave Longley just wrote?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in any case, we should include the prose, so the problem description and the high-level overview Dave wrote. So regardless of which algorithms we are using then.
Okay, I got you.
But before deciding on the algorithms, I would like to have a look at them.
Sure. So that would be a proposal to pull in the purpose general problem statement text into the main spec to just accept that. Greg, you're on the queue.
For the most part, I think that Dave's algorithms addressed the issue that most had me concerned about Marcus Rewrite, was the ability to sort of walk through the algorithms with some sample data and have a good feeling for what was going to happen, in particular in the compaction side, but I think also in context processing, sort of the recursive nature of term evaluation, I think makes it pretty easy to see exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
In the compaction side, I note that in addition to an inverse context, there is still an algorithm on term selection, which on the surface of it would seem to be pretty similar to the intention of the term ranking algorithm. I'm wondering if Dave could explain a little bit sort of how the division of responsibility between the term selection and the inverse context processing.
Sure. So the inverse context essentially is the reverse lookup table for various mappings to terms. And the way the term selection algorithm works is it builds up or it takes as an input the preferred containers you would like to use for a given value, which you'll always end up putting set first unless you have an index key, an at index in there, you'll put that first, or if you have a list, you'll put that first. And the only thing that generally right now comes after that is no container. So you build up your preferred containers, and then you put in the acceptable language mapping or type mapping as inputs to the term selection algorithm. Then what the term selection algorithm does is it just does lookups on the inverse context, going from the most specific matches to the most generic matches, looking for a term along the way, or a property generator along the way. So it does that without having to have the ranking numbers in there, which people found a little bit confusing. And it also does it with a lookup table, so it's more so it happens more quickly. And also understanding a lookup table is a lot easier for certain people. So effectively all that happens is when you're doing compaction, you look at the value and the IRI that you have, you get the information about the value for its language or type mapping. If you're dealing with a list, you find the most compatible list or type mapping or language mapping that would cause no conflicts, and then you pass that information to the term selection algorithm, and the term selection algorithm will just loop through the lookup map, going from most specific mappings to least specific mappings until it finds a term that it can use. The other thing that happens is the inverse context is built, when you build the inverse context, you pre-sort all of the terms that are in the context by the shortest length and then breaking ties with the lexicographically least term, so that the only terms that show up in the inverse context in any given position for a container type or language mapping combination are the terms that you would pick based on them being the shortest and the alphabetically least. So the interaction between them is the compaction algorithm collects the information about the value, passes that to the term selection algorithm, and then the term selection algorithm just uses the inverse context, going from most specific to most generic until it finds a term. So you could think of the new term selection sub-algorithm sort of as Marcus's inverse context querying algorithm. It's very similar to how that used to work. I hopefully eliminated some of the the extra looping that was in there just by storing a little bit more information in the inverse context. But that's not here or there. Anyway, that's how they interact. And hopefully the prose is less scary now than I feel like it was before, or less, it's easier to digest.
Well, I think that's the key. I think that's been the problem with the algorithms all along, particularly, I mean, I was never a fan of term rank. It just seemed to work. But is the understanding of it by someone else. I think what might help in the inverse context discussion would be a picture that would mm-hmm. basically sort of show, or a table that would sort of show what results look like for some
I agree with the table. I think we should use a table that is not tied to any sort of implementation specific thing. I think the picture we had in there before, there was sort of like a large JSON object of maps. I don't think that's the right way to go, but I think if we had a table where you could sort of draw little arrows, you could have the column showing the mappings that you have, and then draw little arrows for which term it maps up with. I think that would be a good way to describe the active context.
One other question. In the compaction algorithm, you describe I wasn't exactly clear because I was, frankly, running a little out of steam when I got to that point. But there is a process of doing shallow copies and using, apparently, creating an intermediate object which uses the expanded keys, which then is used for removing duplicates when using property generators. Is that basically, how does that relate to either of the existing algorithm implementation?
So I don't know if that was getting too implementation specific or not, but I wanted it to be clear that in the alternative existing algorithm, we just talked about removing things from the expanded element, but I wanted it to be clear that we're not going to modify any of the data that's coming into the algorithm. And so the way that I avoided that in the fewest number of steps was to just say you can make a shallow copy of what's coming into the algorithm, since you're going to be dropping properties and values from it. And essentially it's just a way of saying you're going to modify what's incoming without actually modifying what's incoming.
Okay. Like duping the structure first.
Yeah, okay. Without having to do a full copy. So people could understand that you didn't have to do a lot of extra work. It was a small amount of work to just sort of drop links in the data structure.
All right. Well, I would say that we do need to move forward with this, and I think that Dave's rewrite addresses the longstanding issues of the complexities of the algorithm, at least I think as much as possible. I think compaction is still really complicated, but I think this is the way to go, with the proviso of my suggestions in a number of those issues.
Right. There's also something that could maybe simplify the algorithm steps a little bit, which is we often have cases where we're repeating very similar tiny little operations. Like I said in my email about this, we often have a single item that needs to be normalized to an array. So if you have a single item that's not an array, it needs to become an array where that item is the only element in the array. There might be a way for us to cleverly just describe that once in the document and link to it and have, say normalize it to an array but always use a link. Just little steps like that might shorten the step text. There are several different cases where if you were writing an implementation, you would write a tiny little function to just do this stuff, and it might be a good idea to maybe have a little section that describes something like that and link to it. That may or may not be a good idea, but it might make it easier to follow.
Yeah, I think it's
without losing the details of what the step does.
So like a microalgorithm section up near the term definitions that
describes
what we mean when we say array eyes or something like that.
Right.
Yep. So really quickly, I also had a high-level read over a good chunk of the spec. I did not get into the algorithms, completely into the algorithms, but like Greg, I agree that the purpose and general solution additions, I think, were the best additions out of everything, and the algorithms are vitally important. They're very, you know, very important, but I think the biggest problem we had is that you couldn't just look at the spec and just look at something that's not the algorithms and get a very good idea of how all of them fit together. And I feel like we have that now with the general solution section. So I think that's really the best addition, and I think that's the thing that is really going to help folks understand kind of what's going on in these algorithms. And of course, not to belittle the amount of work that went into the algorithms. That's where the vast majority of the work was, and at least in the four or five algorithms that I read through, it was very clear to me. It was they were far more understandable than what we had before, right? So the last 2 weeks we've been talking about it being really nice if we could look at the algorithm. And they were just broken into kind of a really simple set of steps that you could follow, like if-else steps. And I think Greg moved us a little more towards that approach. And Dave Longley has since then taken that and pushed us more in the right direction. So I felt very comfortable reading the algorithms in this alternate two spec. Whereas I couldn't necessarily say that for certainly not the first revision, and then even with Greg's rewrite, I was still a little unsure about some of the steps there. So I'm at least personally very happy with where the alternate two spec is. But as Marcus said, I think we need to have more people look at the algorithms and make sure that they work for them. And then kind of move forward from there. Anyone else want to weigh in on the spec that has read the spec?
No, so I just have a very quick question. I just saw that you basically removed all the error constants from the algorithms. Was that intentional or not? Or what do you think?
Yeah, actually, I was going to go back and do another. I talked to Manu about this. So originally, Greg had mentioned that he didn't want the specific error information in the algorithms and wanted to use more of the must and should or must not language. I'm getting a lot of feedback. In any case, so what I tried to do was sort of combine what Marcus wanted, which was to mention the specific errors or that an error was happening, with what Greg wanted, which was to just use must and should language. And I think in the end, we're probably going to want to put back what those specific errors are that Marcus had, because anyone who's implementing the algorithms or the processor is going to want to know what the specific error case is. So everywhere that I changed it, it says something like, You must do this, otherwise it's an error, and I sort of have some English that describes the error maybe a little bit. I think we should go back and put what the API error is in there, and people reading the algorithms, if they don't want to specifically use the API errors, they don't have to, but they can at least see they can go to the table and see what kind of error it is. And we'll have to get Greg's opinion on that, but I think we should combine the must and must not language and still have the error information that's there that Marcus has. And that's what I think. That's how I think it should end up.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah. So a couple things on that. With regards to must and must not, I think perhaps it was Marcus's feedback that indicated that if we use must and must not, then we're duplicating normative information that exists or should exist pretty much entirely in the grammar section. So I think we were going to look for some alternate way of doing that. That said, what I didn't particularly care for in Marcus's version was the concept of sort of raising an error, and I think using an error code, it just seemed incongruous with the notion of an algorithm, which seems like a mathematical, something that's more mathematical. So what I would suggest is that we try to use some wording that describes, that uses a, perhaps if we have an description which described is like a constant and then it has a title, for instance, list of list errors. And then we could say something like that, you know, if this situation is encountered, it represents a list of list error. And then that could even be a TREF to be able to go straight to the constant definition or something like that. But I guess I prefer something that is more is less prescriptive in terms of, say, raising errors. But I do agree that it's used to specifically note what the exceptional condition is, and then leave it to the API to describe that in an exceptional condition, you processor must raise an error, or whatever the callback mechanism is.
That sounds like a good approach to me. That would be fine with me. I think it's important that we link down to the API section.
Well, isn't that what we had before? I mean, there is the table at the end with all the error codes.
Yeah, I think it's very close to what we had before, but Greg wants a subtle change in the language so that we don't talk about raising errors. We just talk about the condition that you're sort of in, and we link to down to the APIs for the specific kind of error it is, and the API can describe when to raise an error.
Yeah, actually, I'm wondering if maybe there's sort of a circular dependency issue with having an algorithm linked to the API. Maybe what we need is some other statement of what the errors are that are not directly tied to the API. And then the API can define constants that are associated with those errors, and the algorithms can describe the case, the can reference the sort of the description of those errors. And all right, I don't want to make it too complicated by having too many things. It's just a, sort of a dependency issue. It seems to me the algorithms should exist without the API.
Yeah, so Greg, you're kind of asking for a two-level lookup table where the middle lookup is kind of a more prosy, and then that and the API can refer to the more prosy lookup table, and the algorithms can refer to the more prosy lookup table.
You know, it might be useful to have gathered together in one location sort of the a description of the problems that a algorithm might come up with, and that also provides us with a way to index back to the grammar for what the normative text is that prompts those exceptional conditions.
Well, I mean, since the error codes are basically strings describing the error, I don't see how this is really binding the algorithms to the API. I mean, it's true that those strings are then collected in an enum, but it's in the end, it's just a string.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I just my input. So, what other people think about this? I guess.
I think it would be good to have that table to be able to see all of the possible problems in one place.
Okay, so let's take this discussion offline and just come up with a couple of other potential things, potential approaches to the problem. I think we have a pretty decent idea of what Greg would like to see and Marcus's concerns, and we'll try and meet somewhere in the middle. Or with something that works best for the spec. Can we go ahead and move to a proposal to at least adopt the high-level purpose and general solution language that's in the spec right now? And then maybe next week after Marcus has been able to review the algorithms, we can then potentially move to adopt one of the sets of algorithms in across the three specs. Does anyone have any other input before we do a proposal?
I would like to, after this, come back and discuss a little bit about the RDF algorithms so that we can at least get current on what we feel the open issues are. So I'll spend time on that.
Okay. So the proposal is adopt the purpose and general solution language in the alternate to HTML specification.
Yeah, and does that also include, I also made some prose updates to the features, which I felt better described expansion and compaction's purpose, which is adding and removing context. I don't know if other people read through those and agreed. Okay.
Yeah, I did, and I thought that we should keep the what's in the alternate two spec, in the rewrite that you did. I feel that the spec that Dave Longley has put together, at least in the very beginning of the spec, it flows much nicer from feature to feature. They're all kind of tied in really nicely, and it also allows you to kind of jump back and forth if you want to. I'd say the proposal should adopt the features introduction as well. So any other input on that? Adopt the features introduction language, purpose, and general solution language in Dave Longley's alternate two spec?
I haven't had a look at that, so I can't.
Would you rather us keep it off then, or?
Well, I don't think in the past we've raised such a barrier to making changes to the spec.
I can't vote on it, or I can't say anything about it because I haven't looked at it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right, so what are we doing? Are we putting it in the proposal or not?
Well, maybe we don't need to put that in the proposal, but we can go ahead and make the change as a separate commit, and then if there's objections, we can address that later on. But like I said, in the past, I think the job of editors is to try to explain the will of the group well, and to the degree that's what Dave is doing, then it's right in line with that.
Okay. All right. So I'll remove that from the proposal. The proposal is to adopt the purpose and general solution language in Dave Longley's alternate 2 specification. Okay, and Paul, if you want a plus one, minus one, plus zero. If you're still on the call. All right, and then is that everyone?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. All right, so that's resolved.
Dave Lane.
I don't think Dave Lane's on the call, is he?
Oh.
I see him join us.
He did, but maybe he's gone now.
Okay. All right. Great. So I guess the only thing we'll wait on then is, Marcus, if you could review the spec by next Tuesday and give us your thoughts on it. I think next Tuesday we'll be able to talk about the algorithms and whether or not we want to adopt those, or which one of the specifications algorithms we want to adopt.
Yeah, we'll do.
Okay. Anything else on the algorithm rewrite before we move on?
Just to briefly touch on the RDF section of that.
Yeah, right, yes. Go ahead.
There was an open issue with regards to aligning it with, or there was an issue with regards to aligning it with RDF concepts, which was closed some time ago. So if there are some issues that are in there, then I think either issue markers or commenting on some or reopening an issue to describe that would be useful. Otherwise, I think what the feedback we had some time ago was to have some examples, and I can update it with some informative examples on what happens with the transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think examples would be very helpful, at least to the RDF working group, so they can see how the JSON-LD translates to just Turtle or whatever.
The question might be if we base the RDF algorithms on flattened and expanded documents, that would make it easier to explain, maybe, but the algorithms itself wouldn't be much simpler.
Yeah, I think they are based upon expanded, but not flattened. The difference would be doing some... there's some recursion that's in the algorithm right now that would presumably eliminate the recursion. I'll look at that to take a sense of if it would simplify the algorithms much, but frankly, I don't find the algorithms to be too complicated, so we'll... Mm-hmm. You know,
no, the algorithms, I had a brief look at it. They would stay almost the same. It's just that it might be simpler to explain it in prose because you can say you just loop over all the nodes and do that for every name graph as well, and that's basically it. Otherwise, you have to collect all those nodes, and you end up creating triples which are not ordered, or the triple stream looks quite different.
With regards to 2RDF, I'm reluctant to worry too much about the triple ordering. I don't think that's not something that concerns most RDF algorithms. And that's in the way that you compare these things, aside from vnode naming, is pretty similar for people that are implementing RDF conversion algorithms in general. So it seems reasonable to stick to that. And I'm a little concerned about the extra processing overhead required to not only expand but flatten the structure before you can convert it to RDF. I'm thinking that many authors wouldn't really necessarily feel a need to do that. The complexity is on the order of what a Turtle parser complexity is already.
So really, really quickly, I think I agree with Marcus. I think Marcus's strongest argument is that it might be easier to explain to people. So when you have to explain an algorithm and you either have to explain it in a recursive way or a looping or just via looping, looping's usually easier to grasp for most people. So I think I'd rather, you know, if we have to rewrite the algorithm, and it doesn't sound like we're going to have to do that, but if we were to do that, or if someone were to take a stab at the 2RDF algorithm using flattened input, it would be interesting to see which one's easier to understand. And it seems to me that the looping base, working from flattened input and converting that to RDF would be easier to explain than the recursive mechanism.
All right. Well,
again,
like I said, I'll take a look at it.
I mean, it is kind of, I think we can go to rec with either one. So I don't think it's blocking us from anything. Anything else on the two from RDF algorithm? I'll note that Dave Longley did add RDF predicate, RDF subject, and RDF object, I think, into the terms.
Yeah, I just threw those in there with links to RDF concepts. I didn't necessarily use them all that much because I didn't change the RDF algorithms too much other than making them work with an array of triples, which we decided to do. Or array of quads, rather.
Yeah, I think 2RDF is supposed to do one callback with all of the results rather than a callback for every triple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I changed it so you pass in an array that just queues them up.
Anything else on the algorithm before we move on to issue 217? All right. So issue 217 has to do with being able to use a blank node identifier, or blank node-like identifier for as the graph name. And this is something that both Greg and I kind of raised with the RDF working group. And they came back with a pretty clear direction, which was graph names can only be IRIs. They can't be anything else. And that kind of screws us over when we're talking about graph normalization. So when you have, when you go to normalize a graph and you have an array of two graphs, both of them don't have any names, that's a problem because we have, you have to generate a name for the graph, and you can, and that name that you generate for the graph can't it can't just depend on the data in the graph. It also has to deal, it also has to be based on linkages into the graph. So that's just a fancy way of saying we can't use a hash of the graph contents to name the graph.
Another way to think of it is if you had two graphs that didn't have any identifiers in a JSON-LD document, but they had the same values in them, all of a sudden you would have to consider them as duplicates of one another, which isn't necessarily true.
Right. So just because two graphs have the exact same information in them does not mean that they're the exact same graph.
Well, what if we were to say that if graph occurs in an object without an ID, it just is an alias for the default graph?
That's also a bit problematic because then we don't have any way of saying that these two graphs are not the default graph, but we don't have names for them.
Well, but according to RDF concepts, you can't have two graphs that don't have names. And it's, I think it's important for us, particularly in this regard, to align with RDF concepts. Otherwise, you're going to try to turn that into RDF, and you're going to fail, or you're going to do something different, which would be, I think, a bigger problem.
Well, I think that the big problem is we don't have, if we do that, we don't have a way of identifying something with an identifier that is local to the document. I mean, that's the whole purpose of blank node. Well,
doesn't a frag ID sort of by definition local to the document? Local to the location of the document.
And
that's commonly used for people that have documents and want to refer as, you know, sort of an alternative to the range 14 issue is to use frag identifiers for the things that do not represent the resources themselves.
So why don't we use frag IDs for vnode identifiers then?
I think many people do. I mean, many people, when they're authoring documents, don't, you know, avoid using vnodes and use fragment identifiers.
Yeah, but we still have vnodes.
There are some cases, you need vnodes for things like lists, certainly. And in general, the concept of being able to refer to something that you do not want to name. It's just that the RDF model does not allow you to do that with graphs. You can do it in Sparkle with a variable, but you cannot do it in RDF.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue I have. The only reason that's true in RDF is it's just a thou shalt not name thing. I could not see a strong reason behind doing it to not allow you to use some kind of blank node like identifier. That's only local to the, you know, that's local to the document. It seems like, you know, we have these blank node IDs and the only thing that they can be used for is nodes inside of a graph. You can't use them for the graph themselves, and seems to me that the reason for that is, well, it's because it's an RDF concepts, full stop. There's no actual reasoning behind it.
Well, technically you can't process the same document twice and get the same vnodes out. I think that's generally the case in RDF. And there's just this whole scope of vnode identifiers. If you're describing something using a vnode, then it cannot be referred to any other way. You know, once it's in some form of a graph store, there's no way to access it. If particularly depending upon the scope of bnodes within a data store.
Nicholas, sorry.
I'm just concerned that this is an area where if we diverge from RDF, where the discussions already happened, whether we like it or not, then we're just setting ourselves up for more problems.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I'm just going to type from RDF. And I agree with that in principle, but first off, I need a clarification of another thing that's been said, which I'm not really sure how it's intended to be interpreted. And we say that we support bnode names for properties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that implying the terms which are not mapped to IRIs, or the fact that we support bnode identifiers in IDs? So if you explicitly say that key something has the ID underscore colon something else, I suppose it's the latter.
That again, Nicholas. I think it's the latter, but I don't know if I quite fully understood what you were saying.
No, I was just making sure that we didn't mean by bnodes that we said that the terms which have no ID or an explicit ID of null are somehow bnodes, but that's not the case, right?
No, they are dropped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good. But then I wonder if we should somehow, I mean, we support that, but not for graphs. And I think that we should be consistent in this case. And given that the syntax of ID supports bnode IDs, we could say that something like a really explicit should not, or something like that, regarding both bnode IDs for terms and for graphs, or some kind of, when converting to RDF, these will fail. And in the general case, we discussed what happens when you send a graph with names when you contact negotiate and get JSON-LD back as well. And perhaps there is something to the solution we had there, which could be applied here as well. So that if you have a bnode ID as a name and you try to interpret that as an RDF graph, it doesn't have a name. I mean, I agree in principle with Greg, and I see the real danger of having bnode IDs for graphs. The only upside I see of that is that if you never actually use that name anywhere, the only reason for having a bnode identifier as the name is to be able to say that there are two distinct graphs, and to say that no one should ever use that ID because it's volatile. It doesn't mean anything outside of it. It's only usable if you navigate to it from a reference, and you don't, but you might have a reference to that graph within the graph, although that's a very strange use case, but it's plausible.
Right. Well, I think that's the concern here, is that the model doesn't allow you to have, the RDF concepts model does not allow you to say there exist two graphs, they have the exact same information, but they're two different, they're two totally different graphs without naming them, right? So that's the first problem. And the other problem is a little more practical, in that we need to give them a name when we normalize. You need to convert those into a byte string, and if the person forgets to put at ID on the graph, you can't do it. and the entire algorithm is just going to stop, right?
If you're normalizing to n quads, then that's an illegal. It's a syntactically invalid document, according to our.
Right, but all we would need to do to fix it is just generate an ID for it, right? So we can generate a fragment identifier. I guess that's okay.
Or a scalarized ID, perhaps.
Well, we can't do that because the ID depends wholly on the connectivity of the graph. We can't do that. That's an impossible operation. It depends on the interconnectivity. We can go into it in a bit more depth out of the call, but you can't scalarize. So the only thing that you can do is you can generate a blank node-like identifier, or we can generate a fragment identifier. But the argument against generating a fragment identifier is, why are we doing that? Because blank node identifiers already exist. Why can't we just reuse that mechanism?
Because it's not RDF.
But it's not RDF because the RDF people have said you can't do that, but they haven't given any kind of reasoning behind it.
I think we have this, you know, we have this really odd tension with the whole RDF thing, and I think a lot of it is there because, you know, people in this group don't buy into what RDF's done. However, we have hitched our wagon to RDF, and we have gone quite a long ways to align with RDF concepts, except in this regard, and I don't really see why a requirement of, if you want to do this, you use fragment identifiers to refer to things that don't otherwise require names, it breaks the model.
It's just, we're just inventing something new when we don't need to. That's my main problem with it, is we're generating this new mechanism that does exactly what blank node identifiers do. And it's not a clean design. I mean, I'm fine with doing the whole dirty design because it seems like we have the problem here. I believe is more political than actual technical, right? So the reason that we're coming up with this new fragment identifier mechanism is because the RDF working group is taking such a hard stance on this.
Well, we're not coming up with a fragment identifier mechanism. All we would do is say that if graph exists in an object without an ID, then it is default graph. And if it does exist in a graph with an object with ID, the object ID must resolve to an absolute IRI. So it's then an implementation for someone such as PaySwarm to work around that and use fragment identifiers. I don't think the specification says anything about using fragment identifiers.
When we spec the normalization algorithm, we have to tell them exactly how to generate those fragment identifiers, or we have to throw an error whenever they try and normalize the graph with.
If the name must be an IRI, then there's no issue. What we would need to do is to raise an exception or note that this is a violation of the grammar rules in order if you encounter something that is not in IRI.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, where was I? I think that the RDF concepts in detail about this recently. One thing that strikes me as odd is that you never, in any other part of the RDF conception model, expect the IRI or B node to be in any way different. I mean, well, apart from lists, which I think have the syntactical restriction that they must not be labeled with IRIs. Greg, do you recall if that's correct?
Yeah. Of course, the other thing is that B node identifiers identify nodes, and a graph name is not a node. That's why
we could not say
it's a B-node. We'd have to say it's a B-node identifier. Of course, then it's identifying something which isn't really a node.
It's a B-graph.
It was a B-graph identifier.
Well, actually, the current RDF-11 concept spec says, and this is the exact text, blank nodes in RDF graph are drawn from the infinite set. They're disjoint from the set of all IRIs and the set of all literals. It says absolutely nothing about being disjoint from graphs. So technically, based on the spec text right now, we could do this.
No,
but
a graph is not a node.
Literals
and IRIs
are nodes. It doesn't say anything about that in the spec. I understand that's true and that everyone would agree to that, but that's definitely not what the spec says right now.
Maybe we should find a bug.
Well, but the spec says that the graph name must be an IRI.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it doesn't say anything about not being able to. Well, I guess it's. Yeah, I guess that could make it clear.
What strikes me as a bit funny is that given the no uniqueness assumption, there is nothing to guarantee you that two graphs with the identical triples are not the same graph, even if they have different IRIs. You can only do that on an OWL level by saying that they are disjoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the other problems with this whole model theoretic stuff in the RDF working group, is I think they've gotten it wrong. Because they just here's the problem. You can have two blank nodes, one that refers to the other, and both of them can use blank node identifiers. You cannot have the same thing with the graph. Why?
Well, I think with many things, it's because that was the only thing they could agree upon. Consensus.
I guess that's my point, is that they couldn't agree on anything.
It depends on whether we feel we are really bound to the RDF data model and therefore bound to the decisions of the work group. I guess in my feeling is that when we hitched ourselves to the RDF working group, that was the deal we made.
I think well known that Greg and I disagree on this. I think that we try to be as close as we can with the RDF data model, right? But there are parts where we said some JSON, and this is in the spec text, in the JSON-LD spec text today, we say not all JSON-LD documents can be translated to RDF. For example, when you have a blank node as a property, right? And that's the way we got out of that. That we broke away from the RDF data model in very specific cases. I mean, we're like 99.9% aligned with the RDF. We just don't do certain things that we do certain things that are not supported by RDF. One of them is we support blank nodes in property as property for properties. And the other one up to, you know, last week was we support blank node-like identifiers for graphs. Because JSON-LD can actually differentiate between two graphs that don't have names, that are not labeled with an IRI, and RDF cannot.
That doesn't in any way help normalization, though, because normalization is based on the quad output.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, so if we tie ourselves to the RDF data model, we have to invent this new mechanism that, you know, because we depend on a quad. Something has to go in the graph position in the quad output for normalization.
I don't think we have to invent a new mechanism, but I do think that the end result should probably be, if you're going to use the graph keyword, you have to include an IRI with the graph if it's not at the document. Because otherwise people are just going to get confused as to what the meaning of that is in the JSON-LD document. And if we require that, then people will come up with their own scheme for the IRI, and that will work just fine with normalization.
which means effectively that all graphs need to be named now in JSON-LD, whereas before
they
did not. Before they didn't. So,
this is
like,
true.
You know, so if you have an RDFA document and you forget to name the graph in RDFA, so this is going to be this decision is going to be pushed into RDFA. You forget to name the graph, the RDFA processor is just going to die on you because you forgot to do, you know, graph about equals some value. I mean, this decision affects all of the other serializations.
Well, RDFA is presumably even more tightly bound to the RDF model. And it couldn't.
Here's my point. If you had two documents, two graphs, in two different documents, what are you going to name those graphs? They both represent the default graph at a certain resource. What's the name of the graph?
Well, a default graph doesn't have a name, so.
Right. Exactly.
I'm not
point.
Quite following what your concern is.
Well,
there.
What I'm saying is that
you can't have two default graphs in a data set, so they're named. And by definition, a named graph has an IRI. So that's got to be the true for an RDFA serialization at least. And if the problem is the RDF model, then that's the place to have the discussion and get the change made.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that sounds like what the real problem is.
Right,
unless
you're using in the wrong group.
Go ahead.
I just wonder what the... I mean, we already have the support for blank node ID properties.
There's not quite as big an issue there because properties, they are nodes, right? In the sense that an IRI are nodes, therefore you can imagine a blank node. And we already have notation 3, which does allow that. Now, notation 3 is not RDF.
But notation 3
also allowed literals as subjects.
But they also allowed unnamed graphs which aren't the default graph formulas.
The graph, yeah, formula, or notation 3 formula are really different than named graphs. I think the notion that a named graph is a combination of an IRI and a graph, right? And this isn't.
But can't we say that a JSON-LD graph which uses a bnode ID as the ID is not a named graph. It's a very shady thing which you shouldn't use. But if you use it, you should know that you have to map that onto something to get proper quads out of it.
But I think the fact that you can use graph in objects makes it makes it an act of commission for people to not do that. If they just use these things, they're going to get graphs that don't have names or are named oddly.
So I think that the concern about how this affects the normalization algorithm still stands. Like, what are we doing? Are we going to create an algorithm that generates a certain type of fragment identifier?
Well,
or
I thought, didn't we agree that the normalization algorithm was going to work in with RDF, so that you could use an arbitrary...
I think the concern is if you had two JSON-LD documents that were the same and you ran them through two different processors, they might be assigned... The graphs might be assigned different fragment identifiers. And so when you ran them both, they're the same information, but when you ran them both through and created quads out of them and then ran the normalization algorithm, they wouldn't match.
Well, that would
so
only be true
to
if we automatically assigned fragment identifiers, and I certainly wasn't suggesting that.
Okay, I thought the suggestion was coming up with saying you have to name these somehow. And if two different JSON-LD processors don't name them the same thing when they're outputting RDF, then you're not going to get the same result out of the normalization algorithm.
No, I think...
And that's a problem.
I think there's a constraint that if you have an object with both with graph, it must have an ID which resolves to an absolute IRI. to be validated.
Right, what I'm saying is that either we have to require that for valid JSON-LD or throw an error when you try to convert to RDF. There's no middle ground.
But if you wait till you sort of to RDF, you've sort of done that later on. I mean, we could do it that way, but then you're sort of allowing a whole ecosystem of things to evolve, which you could have identified during, say, the expansion phase.
Right. And people will start doing it, and then we'll have a mess. Really, if we're going to require this to match up with RDF concepts as it is right now, we have to disallow graphs in JSON-LD that don't have identifiers that are not the default graph.
Just a quick question, because I think I don't understand something. Are you actually normalizing data sets or graphs?
Data sets.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's a data set.
Yeah, but at least the algorithm is called RDF graph normalization.
Even though maybe it needs to
before
be
data sets existed.
Yeah.
That's but why it says that.
You can have multiple graphs in there.
And so you normalize everything, you normalize the whole data set afterwards.
That's not the way the algorithm works. You normalize everything all at once. You don't have to do each graph independently.
Yeah, well, conceptually, I mean.
You normalize quads.
You could think of it that way. You're just normalizing quads.
Okay. And then you sign the whole data set in the end.
Yeah, yes. You normalize everything so that you can generate B-node identifiers for things that need it, and then you sort the quads, and then you sign the data, a serialization of that.
Okay.
Yeah, and to this point, the way the normalization, the data set, let's call it the data set normalization algorithm, the way it worked was it used B-node-like identifiers to name graphs that did not have names, and it worked out beautifully. Like, it's really nice and clean. And now we're saying that you can't do that, and so the backup plan now is that we have to generate fragment identifiers in a deterministic way.
No, well, that was not my...
The backup plan is you don't think about it at all, and whatever the identifier is, all the graphs have to have identifiers. And what we're saying is two people working with two different JSON-LD documents, those documents are not the same if the fragment identifiers are not the same.
Right. But it means that you have to name, well, okay, so if...
Yeah.
And anything that isn't named is the default graph.
It's not just that the fragment identifiers have to be the same. The expanded IRIs have to be the same. So if you feel that every document has a name, in other words, has a location, then the fragment, then the two things are the same only if they're really the same document. They have the same location. Therefore, so that the fragment identifier expands to an absolute ID, which is equivalent.
Yeah, and it's just that requirement is the thing that I'm kind of railing against, is because, I mean, we don't have that requirement for blank nodes. We don't say every single blank node has to have a fragment identifier that resolves to a full IRI. So why do we have it for graphs?
Well, again, I think this is an issue for the RDF working group.
Yeah, I agree. It's just I want to make sure that people understand that there is an actual issue here. There is code that needs to be written in the next 2 weeks that depends on this decision, because you know we use a normalization algorithm today for all of our financial data.
Does it really depend on this decision?
It does. Here's why it depends on the decision. The normalization algorithm is X today. If we change the decision, or if we if the decision changes in the next year or two, the normalization algorithm changes, and we're going to have to come up with a new normalization algorithm that takes the decision into account, we'd rather not do that. And we can do that, but it's just...
If, for example, we are going to say that graph names have to be IRIs, there would be no valid JSON-OD document which has unnamed named graphs or named graphs which are named with blank nodes. So your current algorithm wouldn't change at all. You just have a few...
If the decision is made in that direction, yes.
Sorry?
I was going to say, if the decision is made in that direction, then yes, the algorithm does not have to change in any way. If the decision is made in a different way, so that there is some kind of identifier that can be generated, but it's not a blank node identifier, then the algorithm has to change.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But regardless of what we decide today, I think your algorithm doesn't have to change.
We can't use blank node identifiers for graph IDs. Our algorithm has to change. It has to kick out an error now, whereas
but
before
you would
it
never
happen.
Get in. You would never get in documents with which use blank node identifiers anymore.
Yeah, the error would be elsewhere, is what Marcus is saying. The error would not be in the normalization algorithm.
Right, but there would still be an error.
Yeah, there would be a new error somewhere in the JSON-OD, probably during expansion.
Yeah, and today we don't have that error.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's... I didn't intend for us to spend so much time on this, but... Do we have a clear idea of what we want to do here? Do we want to disallow blank node-like identifiers for graph names?
That's one possible solution, and I think it would work for the paceworm stuff. I think it would be fine. Certain things that look like they'd be the same wouldn't be, and that's okay. But we don't have any requirements for using embedded graphs in JSON-OD documents in the core stuff. That means people that are coming up with things in Paceworm, you know, like complex listings, they'll put their own identifiers on there, and that'll work fine.
Yeah. Although the model's broken at that point, the RDF working group, that the model's broken. Or I don't have much interest in trying to do that. Okay, well, then this group could propose to disallow blank node identifiers as graph names, and we can just move on. Any objections to doing that? Okay, so the proposal is disallow blank node identifiers for graph names. I'm going to be minus one. Is there any other proposal that we could put forward that would get more consensus than that?
We could perhaps use a should not.
Well, that's what we currently have in the spec. We have, it should be an IRI.
In that case, we would have to add something to the RDF conversion algorithms to note that and note that exception, which seems like it gets in the way of normalization, though.
Yeah. Well, either way.
Go ahead. I think normalization could not use the that algorithm. To and from RDF algorithm. It's just, I mean, this is just kicking the can further down the road, though. I mean, we're going to end up having this discussion again. we do that.
I think we just need to also specify what we're going to do when graph is encountered and there's no ID in JSON-LD. We need to specify what the behavior is, if that's an error or not.
The only time it actually becomes an error is when we convert to RDF. JSON-LD doesn't care.
Well, if we don't support it in our data model, we have to throw an error.
Right.
If we're going to resolve that proposal you just put up.
Right. Yeah. So I think what Greg said is that there could be something that gathers more consensus via a should not, which means that the data model would support it, but we tell people they shouldn't do it.
But Pasteworm will do it anyway, though.
Say again?
It sounds like Pasteworm will do it anyway.
I think we ought to disallow it now, and we might be able to allow it in the future. You can always go in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, given that the RDF thing won't work otherwise, and it would be dangerous to veer off from that. I mean,
yeah,
it's better to convince the RDF working group.
We can have the fight another day. For right now, we can just disallow it. No, don't make JSON-LD documents that don't have IDs in there. It will result in an error.
Well, I think by sticking with should, but with an exception, the RDF conversion algorithms, what you allow for is usages of it that become important and useful to actually affect a future version of RDF.
Well, the question is, our data model would deviate at that point from the RDF data model. Is that something that the group's okay with?
Well, we might just want to get feedback from the RDF working group, see how they feel about it.
We have.
The idea of doing should not. Do we have feedback on us saying we strongly recommend against it, but we allow it, versus we just allow it?
Not really. I don't think we have put the full spec text in front of her, or in front of them.
My guess is they would grudgingly go along with should not, but they would, elements would still continue to discount JSON-LD as a serious RDF serialization because we're deviating in ways that seem arbitrary.
Okay, so another proposal is graph names should use IRIs. The JSON-LD data model supports identifiers for graphs that are IRIs and bnode-like identifiers. Well, I guess, and document local identifiers, including bnode-like identifiers.
Well, they sort of have to be bnode identifiers because you can refer to them, right? If you use,
yeah,
it's the same thing. If I have an object,
it is exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
it's technically not the same thing because the definition of a blank node is different from a graph. It's technically not the same. The reason I'm kind of weasel wording this is because a blank node identifier is only supposed to be used on blank nodes, and blank nodes are only something that you find inside of a graph. A graph is not cannot be a blank node. If that makes
sense. When I have an object that has a property such as last modified, and it has a graph, but it is labeled with a bnode identifier,
mm-hmm.
What does the last modified refer to? Does it refer to the name of the graph, or does it refer to something that is in a completely different space?
I didn't follow. Are you so the last modified date associated with a graph?
So I have an object. It contains a it contains an ID, which is a B node identifier. It contains a graph, and it contains a last modified property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we actually have examples for something such as that as a motivation for named graphs, is to be able to describe provenance.
But is there a relation between the IRI and the graph? Isn't the labeling of named graphs in the RDF model saying that there is no semantically defined connection?
Well, that's because they never agreed on semantics, but it was specifically to allow use cases where you would be able to, basically using an IRI as the name of a graph, and you can also use that IRI to describe other information such as that can be interpreted as being provenance of that.
Yeah.
But there's no official semantics which say that is the case. Within RDF, other specs are free to imbue semantics on that relationship.
Yeah,
the issue here is if we use an identifier, if there's a B-node identifier, is that identifier the same for the graph as it is for the subject of the property? Or are they two different things? Is one a B-node and is the other a graph identifier, and there is no relationship between the two?
That would be the cleanest way to set it up. I think now, based on the way the RDF concepts document is written, but I think that the RDF concepts document could be rewritten so that you use blank node identifiers for both graph to name graphs and to give blank nodes a name as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think if this problem could be solved in RDF. And, you know, I think in the context of, as you point out, in RDFA, where we have similar ways of being able to specify these things, that's going to need some resolution. So as such, it really is something that should be brought up in front of the working group now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can ask David Wood to put it on the agenda. We can bring it up. I have a pretty good feeling. I know what's going to happen, but we'll see.
I think what we could hope to get out of that is a retreat on that it must be an IRI, because that would be consistent with the other lack of decisions the working groups made. And the fact that both JSON-LD and presumably RDFA are going to face this issue sort of raises a problem that the RDF really must deal with right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then we'll go ahead and try to bring it on to the RDF working group's agenda and see if we can get that. See where the discussion goes. For the time being, I think we need a proposal in this group to kind of push that discussion. So could we say something like graph names should be IRIs, the JSON-LD data model supports identifiers for graphs that are IRIs, and document local identifiers, without including B-node-like identifiers, without saying they are B-node-like, there are B-node identifiers?
I think that's the best route, and then it's just a matter of what does the RDF conversion algorithm do towards when it encounters that. And of course, there is no round tripping.
A parenthesis just regarding taking this up with the RDF working group. Hasn't the provenance work talked a lot about the usage of name graphs? Personally, I'm always afraid of pushing the use of name graphs for anything else than just storage management, because, like I've said before, I don't like the philosophical issues with it, the turtles all the way down effect and all kinds of strangeness. But it might be that the provenance working group has some input. Perhaps they had the files which they had to put on hold because of the decision in the working group regarding
it. Yeah, it's a good. Yeah, we should definitely hook them into the discussion.
Well, Yvonne is the staff representative on that and is probably familiar with and sympathetic to the issues we're dealing with, so it might be worth having a discussion with him prior to bringing it up in front of the working group.
Sounds wise.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he has a feel for the politics, too.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, so we have a proposal here. I tried to capture it. If anyone wants to wordsmith it, please do. GRASS names should use IRIs. The JSON-LD data model supports identifiers for GRASS that are IRIs and document local identifiers, including VNode-like identifiers, not VNode identifiers. The RDF conversion algorithm should generate an error when a document local identifier is detected when converting to RDF.
Well, I mean, a document local identifier, what about a fragment identifier as well? We shouldn't, for example, generate an error in that case.
Right. Document local identifiers, I guess, excluding fragment identifiers.
But that's those are IRIs.
That is not a relative IRI.
They
I don't know.
You have to have the base there, or they cannot exist without the base, and they are resolved to full IRIs.
Mm-hmm.
So fragment identifiers are turned into IRIs. They are IRIs, dude. Just a syntactic shortcut. It's no semantics.
I guess we can say when a non-IRI, comma,
or when a document.
Identifier.
You could say a document local identifier that does not resolve to an IRI.
Okay. Yep, that's good. Okay. Should generate an error when a document local identifier that does not resolve to an absolute IRI.
Why are we trying to hide the blank node identifier so hard in this proposal?
We're not hiding it. We're specifically saying that these things are not blank node identifiers. They're blank node-like identifiers. Because if we said that they were blank node identifiers, the response from the RDF working group is RDF concepts clearly states that you cannot have a blank node identifier for, you know, a data set.
Well,
it's doesn't identify a blank node.
It clearly states that you must have an IRI.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. JSON-LD data model supports identifiers for graphs that are RIs and document local identifiers that do not resolve to an absolute IRI.
Well, I have a bit of problem with that because then we are introducing a third thing, which is a document local identifier, which. At least I don't know what it is if it isn't a blank node identifier.
Yeah.
Well, we know it can't be a blank node identifier per RDF concepts right now, right? So we're doing that so we don't step on the RDF concepts. So we're basically saying that there's this new thing that's effectively like it's a blank graph identifier, basically. We're creating something.
Why don't we just say something that looks just like a blank node identifier but identifies a graph instead?
I mean, that's what we're doing, yeah.
Why don't we just write that? It's fine.
Okay.
It's very obvious graph that names, that's what we're doing.
Okay, graph names should use IRIs. The JSON-LD data model supports identifiers for graphs that are IRIs and what was the exact wording, Longley?
Identifiers that look like blank node identifiers, but instead identify graphs.
Okay. The RDF conversion algorithm should generate an error when a
or you could say have the lexical form or something.
An identifier Okay, how about this?
It should generate a non-absolute IRI.
It should generate an error when should, a non-absolute IRI. Should generate an error when a non-absolute IRI is detected when converting to RDF. Marcus, I don't think that we can keep the current spec text because we can't use a blank node identifier to identify a graph and conform with RDF concepts. So we would be...
Well, that's what I had proposed we do in the beginning. Would be conformant with RDF concepts.
We would not be conformant with RDF concepts with your proposal.
Well, neither would yours.
Right, but the yours directly challenges that blank node identifiers can be used for naming graphs, whereas the proposal that we currently have on the table does not directly challenge that. It just says, hey, we need something new to be able to identify graphs. That is not an IRI. It's basically
document level.
Which
looks like a blank node identifier and behaves like a blank node identifier.
Yes. That's exactly right.
That subtle difference that's going to annoy people in the RDF. If we don't address that subtle difference.
Yeah, I sort of am more along the lines of what Marcus put in there, but instead of whenever possible the graph name should be an IRI, we might say that the document does not express a valid model if it is not an IRI. So that states that it's invalid, but that it can be stated.
Well, we have the second sentence in relationship to RDF where we say that it can't round trip to RDF. Where is it? If it's not an IRI.
Well, it can't even go to RDF.
Yeah, well, it can be converted to RDF, yeah.
Okay, so what's the proposal then? Keep the current spec text? And add something to say that any graph name that is not an IRI cannot be converted to RDF?
That's already in the spec.
Okay, so the proposal then is to keep the current spec text.
Yeah, if we are not going to change the data model, I don't think we have to change the spec at all.
And I think in this case, probably no change is best. But we might encounter resistance when we have review from the RDF working group.
Mm-hmm.
Should we have the proposal that Manu put there as a backup in that case?
It probably needs an issue marker and mark it as being at risk.
Right.
I think that's really the purpose of describing something as being at risk.
That's also right in the spec.
Great.
Ref in under data model there's this issue.
There is, by the way, a way to mark at risk with RSpec. There's been some criticism of the implementation of that, but we should probably do that.
Okay. All right, so the proposal is just no spec change. What's in there is what we mean. Okay. Well, then we don't need a proposal for that, I don't think. No, we don't need a proposal for that. We'll go ahead and follow this up in the RDF working group, see where we get there.
Shouldn't we do a proposal nevertheless so that we can close our issue cleanly?
Sure. The spec text concerning
I don't know, can we do that prior to discussing this with the RDF working group?
What we're doing is we're saying that this group has, that's the decision in this group, and then the RDF working group can raise a new issue if they disagree with that.
But isn't that already illustrated by the previous proposal, disallow blank node identifiers, that should sum up the state of things? Given that we have a minus one, so it's not, we don't have consensus.
We can leave this open and continue the discussion with the RDF working group. It wouldn't really stop us from going to last call if we mark it as at risk. So I don't see, there's no real danger in leaving the issue open. We don't need to close it.
Right.
Okay, so then how about we leave it open? There's an issue marker in there. We're not changing the spec text. We will bring up the discussion in the RDF working group and see where we get. Is that any objections to that approach?
I think that's fine.
Fine for me.
Okay. All right, so that's it for the call. We're 20 minutes over our 90-minute call, almost going on 2 hours. Sorry for that. Okay, so we'll meet again next week. Marcus, you're doing a review of the algorithms over the next week, algorithms and the rest of the spec text.
We are going to update the spec with Dave's text now, or are we going to wait for that?
Let's wait, because what might end up happening is we might just copy Dave's spec over the index.html file.
Right.
Because I don't think they vary very, you know, in any other way, really.
And why can't we do that now?
Well, because Marcus hasn't had a chance to look at the document, and he's an editor, and I don't think it would be good to prematurely do that. All we have to do is just wait for Marcus to review it and then get his feedback, and then we can do it then.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wait for any RDF changes until that's been finished.
Sounds good. Do we want to publish the syntax spec as a final community group specification very quickly?
If we add an at risk to that whole bit about the graph naming,
it's already there. I didn't
find at risk anywhere in the document.
Oh, it's an issue. It's issue one, I think.
Yeah, it's marked as issue one.
Okay.
So I can change it to at risk.
Yeah, I think maybe, at risk is perhaps a better one, because issue, although it's still open, I guess, until it's been resolved, instead of being issue one, maybe we should link it to the actual issue in GitHub.
Okay. Do we want to go ahead and publish this as a final community group spec? That would
be honest. The only other open issue is the relative IRI issue.
Yes.
And I think that has more to do with the API than the...
Well,
I mean,
we disallow terms of the value of add ID, and that would change the grammar.
And to be clear, the final community group spec does not mean last call. We can still change this document. We just need to get IP commitments from everybody. So this is more about getting intellectual property commitment than it is about the LC document. We can make that update after we do the FCGS release.
Okay.
Yeah, but didn't you just create the final version like 2 days ago?
I created it, but this group hasn't agreed to that is in fact the final version, and we have not used the community group tool to have everyone sign off on the document. So this is a draft that you're looking at. It's not the final version.
even doing that now, I mean, there are still things which the community group has not resolved.
Well, the value is it takes time to get intellectual property commitments, and it would be good to do that sooner than later, so that we can just shift it over to the RDF working group and kind of turn the crank there so that they can start reviewing the document in parallel. Or we could wait a week, but I'd rather, you know, we're kind of, I'd rather not wait. But we could wait a week or two until we get all these issues resolved and then get them integrated in the syntax spec and then push it over.
Let's put it off a week.
Okay.
I do think we need to get it out there, but I agree we need to attempt to try to resolve these issues in CG.
Okay. All right. I think that's it for the call. Anything else before we leave? All right, everyone. Thanks for the great call today, and we'll chat again next week.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.